And hello, everyone, and welcome back to once again another episode of Meeples and Mishaps, where we find some crazy board games, some interesting board games, some obscure board games, and we chat about them. I'm Corey.
And I'm Kaylin, and thank you for joining us once again. We hope that you've been having a lot of fun going through some of these games, the same amount of fun that we've been having going through these games. It's been quite a blast, and especially getting into like the history and stuff. It's been pretty enlightening, pretty interesting. So we've got another good game for you today, and so let's jump into it.
Yeah, so before we hop into it though, Kaylin, how's your week been? What you been up to?
Yeah, not a whole lot. Just working and hanging out with the kids and stuff. I actually played the kids' version of Life today with them.
Oh, how'd that go?
Good. They both enjoyed it. It's very, it's very luck based, right? You just spin the dial and it gives you the number, but all of the cards ask you to do like goofy things. So not quite party game, but like, because you're supposed to be on like a road trip. So it's like you stop to get ice cream. What flavor ice cream did you get? And so then, everybody answers and the person who got the card gets the dollar or whatever. So they enjoyed it. They thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably loved it, probably doing all the silly stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But games for me, I've been playing Tiny Epic Pirates.
Yeah.
Which is the newest Tiny Epic games that just came out. There's another one on Kickstarter for anybody who likes Tiny Epic, but that's kind of been the one. I've also got Charterstone, but I've not started it yet. I'm trying to nail down some time to play it with some people. So that's the one I'm looking forward to.
Nice. And that's kind of another big Stonemaier game that I know takes quite a while. I've really been wanting to play that as well. I have not played it yet either. But it is on my list.
I did play it with some friends of mine. And it is cool. It's the game, you open up the rule books and it's got like two rules in it, and then as you play it you actually peel off the rules from the cards and stick them into the book, and so the rule book actually grows and the map grows and your player boards grow, and so by the 10th game, it's a beast of a game.
That's awesome.
But the theory is you've been picking up and learning all the nuances as you've played.
Yeah.
It's 10 games. It's definitely a legacy game. So
that's pretty awesome. I'm gonna get that soon.
How about you? What have you been playing?
Lately, what have I played? Okay, so the most recent game I played, one that I've actually really been enjoying, I wasn't sure if I'd enjoy it or not, but I've actually really been enjoying, is Horrified. Have you played Horrified yet?
I have. It's a great game.
Yeah, I really like it. So I got it and I was like, because when I first got it, I've heard some mixed reviews from people, majority of people love it, but I've heard some of those reviews from people that just hated it. But I love the theme. I love the artwork and I love co-op games. And so I've played it a total of three times now. I've played it a total of four times now. I've lost twice, won twice. So it's 50-50 there, but I absolutely love it. I think it's a lot of fun. And so I played that recently, and I played Machikoro again for the first time in a long time, which nice. Machikoro is also one of my favorite, just like hang out and chill, throw some dice and have fun game.
Yeah, super straightforward, super easy.
Yeah, and there's like 20 different strategies you can do in that game with how you want to earn money. So it's just a great, light, just let's hang out, have some drinks, play some games type game. Yep. And so I love bringing that one to the table every now and then.
Absolutely.
And the great thing about Horrified is I love all those old monsters from like the old movies and stuff. And they're kind of creepy and, just that fun horror theme, which actually is a great segue into what we are going to be talking about today. What are we playing today?
Today, we are going to jump into the game Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Ooh.
So, this game is exactly on theme with the Horrified with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Oh, yes.
For those of you who don't know, this is a a Robert Louis Stevenson book. It's a classic. You might know Treasure Island. That's probably his most famous one, but he's got several big ones, including Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I guess you could argue Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde's bigger, but yeah, so Waddington's decided to make this into a board game, sort of.
Yeah,
we'll get into why sort of. But yeah, that's the game we decided to cover today. It isn't, I don't think it's going to be as bad as some of the ones that we've previously covered, but we'll get into why we're going to cover it.
Yeah,
there's definitely a reason.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting enough to be covered on this podcast. And like you said, this game was made by Waddington's in 1980. And so one of the things we were kind of discussing is, so this game was designed in, or not necessarily designed, but this game was produced in 1980 from Waddington's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It is a game, it is an abstract game, where you're moving pieces around. Each player has 8 pieces that you're moving around trying to capture something. But we were trying to figure out why in 1980 did Waddington's come out with a game about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. As you've heard from our previous episodes, they love to capitalize on intellectual property and make money off of it. And so we're trying to figure out why in 1980. So this book was written in 1886. Is that right?
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah. And so why in the 1980s did they decide to come out with a random abstract game about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Yep. So, yeah, because it seems weird. Like if they had just waited 6 years, it could have been like a centennial celebration. They kind of missed their mark on that one. But yeah, so we kind of looked into it. We kind of dug around. We saw a 1979 adaptation, including Sherlock Holmes, which is kind of interesting. I didn't get the vibe that it drastically changed anything. It sounded like someone just wanted to capitalize on Sherlock Holmes. And then there were also 2 films that came out in 1980. One was an Italian movie, so probably not super mainstream. The other one was called Dr. Heckle and Mr. Hype. So take that as you will. I'm not even sure what kind of film that would be. But the thing we kind of honed in on and decided this has to be, because Waddington's is a English company, a British company. There was actually a BBC production of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in 1980. And so even though it didn't sound like it was, some colossal success, that was the only thing we could find that kind of pointed to why Waddington's chose this theme for this game.
Yeah.
Maybe there was just somebody that worked at Waddington's that was a big Jekyll and Hyde fan. I don't know. I don't understand. So,
possibly, yeah.
It is what it is.
So there's obviously some reason they decided they wanted to make this game in 1980, and that reason we will probably never know unless we can somehow contact somebody from the company that was there at the time and could give us the info on that. All right, so you hear us talking about this game. So what exactly is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? And it's not like the fabulous Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or can you find, it's not this catchy name, it's just straight up Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I feel like for a board game, you'd want to come up with something a little bit more catchy, that talks about that. But no, it's just pretty much straightforward, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So
at least have a tagline or something.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. So the tagline, speaking of the box here, it says the tension-packed strategy game of bluff and double bluff with 3 ways to win or lose. And what does the rest of this box look like, Kaylin?
Let's see. So there's a kid, probably, I don't know, 10, maybe younger, playing this game. It basically, so there's like this little, it shows the board, just this tiny little board. And then there's these little figurines. They kind of look like wax. Now they're probably obviously plastic, but, and then they're like carved out. So they all 16 pieces look like Dr. Jekyll. And then there's 3 pictures over on the side of the board. Jekyll or Hyde, Only You Know, which we'll get into. The Evil Mr. Hyde, Avoid Capturing Him. And it shows a picture of Hyde, which we'll also get into. And then 7 to Adult is the age range, and 2 players is how many people can play. It says a deceivingly simple strategy game for 2 players requiring nerve and bluff. Your opponent attempts to capture your two-faced figures, but only you know their true identity.
Yes.
That pretty much sums up the game.
Pretty much. You've pretty much learned the game right there. It is a hidden information game. It's an abstract game. It's a capture and set collection as well game, because you are trying to collect a set in this game. So let's kind of get into how this game is played, kind of the history of this game here. So we'll talk about the game, and then we'll talk about everything else that surrounds the game that we kind of want to talk about and why this game kind of came at a weird time. So Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, like we said, it is a abstract game, set collection. So what it is you each have 8 pieces, and they're all busts of Dr. Jekyll. But on the back, 4 of them say Dr. Jekyll, and 4 of them say Mr. Hyde. Well, they just say Jekyll or Hyde. But so behind them, so 4 of your pieces say Jekyll, 4 of your pieces say Hyde on the back side. And you line up your pieces on this grid. And the grid is, what is it? 6 by 6. 6 by 6 grid. Yep. So the outside stay open. And your back middle 8, you will line up your pieces. You can kind of put them however you want. You can put all of your Jekylls up front, all of your Hydes in the back. Or you can kind of mix and match it. But you keep the backside facing you so your opponent doesn't know where you placed your pieces. The point of the game is to capture their 4 Dr. Jekylls to win, or get your one of your pieces all the way to the other end of the board and exit at one of the corners. It's supposed to be like this exit, you escaped and you won. And you lose if obviously the other person catches your Dr. Jekylls, or you accidentally capture 4 of their Mr. Hydes, because that's bad. So those are kind of the way you win. So it is this terrible looking 6 by 6 grid that it looks like a football with some indentions into it. It's terrible. But on your turn, you move one of your pieces, either up, down, left, or right, no diagonal movements, and you get 1 movement per turn. So it's kind of this like cat and mouse chess thing. Or actually, a good example is if you ever played Stratego. Did you ever play Stratego?
I did not. Never have.
Not. Okay. So Stratego is a much bigger scale of this, where it's all hidden information and you're trying to capture your opponent's flag, and you have all these like generals and stuff that you kind of move across the board. So you don't know which pieces are your opponent's Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde. You just have to move your piece, capture one of their pieces by moving your piece onto their spot, and you capture it. Then you flip it around. It's like, oh crap, I got a Mr. Hyde, or yes, I got a Dr. Jekyll. And you have to try to get 4 Dr. Jekylls without getting 4 Mr. Hydes or them collecting yours, you know? So you don't necessarily know what piece you're getting until you take it. You kind of, it's very much body language. You know, how are they moving their pieces? Why are they moving this one way over here? Or are they bluffing me to think that that's a Dr. Jekyll, but it's actually a Mr. Hyde? So it's this kind of cat and mouse abstract thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's got this weird kind of faux strategy. Because yes, there are 3 ways to win or 3 ways to lose. But so you can kind of start with a strategy where you're moving your piece. So like, let's say your initial strategy is I'm going to move my Jekylls and try and move them off of their side of the board. That can be your strategy, but until you start taking pieces, there's no way to really know like what you should do.
Exactly.
And so like it feels like there's strategy, but then like, okay, you move your piece forward and I take, I take one of your Hydes. Well, now my strategy is probably going to change because I'm that much closer to losing.
Yep.
And so the game is kind of evolving every single turn. But at the same time, it's evolving in such a way that you don't have any control.
That is true. It's all based on luck at the beginning, until you kind of start sorting it out and getting a feel of how your opponent's playing. Because yeah, at the beginning you could have all your, you know, your Dr. Jekyll, or sorry, your Mr. Hyde's at the front, and you just start aggressively moving your pieces in, hoping they take them, you know, and then you kind of think, okay, he's playing aggressive, I need to start playing more defensive and maybe try to escape instead of trying to capture pieces. So yeah, you don't really know what to do until you've gone halfway through the game, and then you're like, okay, now I'm going to start adjusting my strategy. Because I feel like if you go all one strategy of trying to just steal their pieces, they're going to easily run around you and escape, you know. So you kind of have to have a mixture of the different strategies, I guess you could say, in this game. Because the thing with like chess, you know, it's very open information. You all see, it's very abstract. You don't know what the player is going to do, but all the information is laid out there. To where this game, there is no information laid out there, but you kind of know what they're going to do. So it's kind of the opposite.
Yeah, and more information, I mean, not complete, but more information is revealed as you play. So at the point that you have three of their hides, your strategy has to be
escaping.
I'm not going to take any more pieces unless I am absolutely sure. Which doesn't work because you can't be absolutely sure.
Exactly.
Because at that point, if I was that player, I would just send all my Jekylls to try and get off the edge of the board, and maybe sneak a hide in there. You know what I mean? Like, there's just no way to know. There's no way to know. There's just not enough information. So,
absolutely. So it's kind of like we said, it's just a very straightforward game like that. You know, it's a much smaller, condensed version of kind of this chess style, you know, mini Stratego. No information until it's kind of resolved as you play. So it's very simple. It takes no time at all to play. And obviously there's really no explaining in this game. The only rules are you can only move up, down, left, right, no diagonal. And the only way to take a piece is to put your piece on their piece, and they have to be next to you. And that's it. The rest is just kind of guess, piece of information together. But you want to know something else very interesting about this game, Kalen?
What?
In 1980, the same year as this, there was actually another game with the exact same gameplay. But guess what? They used ghosts.
Good and bad ghosts. So it's literally the exact same game. Same board, same everything. It's just ghosts instead. And so both players have these little white ghosts, white and red. I don't remember what the other color of ghosts was, but mm-hmm. So they're just ghosts, and you play exactly the same way. You're trying to get your pieces off or whatever. And you can tell on the inside of the ghosts, on the back of the inside of the ghost, which I think they have a little dot on them on the back.
Yes, it's a little dot.
Yeah, I saw another homemade one that had like little wooden, like a nail almost down through the middle of it.
Oh, nice.
And they were red, so it was like there was no mistaking which ones were which. But
this game also had, it was also called Ghosts, just Ghosts. And there was also a game called Phantoms versus Phantoms. And these were all in the same year. And they're all the same exact game. Just different skins.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's crazy that they got away with it. Like, because I'm assuming not all of these were Waddington's.
Yeah, apparently Waddington's did distribute Phantoms versus Phantoms. I don't know what year they distributed it. It could have been the same year. Maybe they were behind, let's just reskin this in three different ways so we can sell the same game to three different crowds. You know, that could have been what happened, but I know that Waddington's is listed on the Phantoms versus Phantoms game, but so there's also like seven other publishers also listed on Phantoms versus Phantoms. So it could have, I don't know who exactly did it first, but yeah.
Yeah. There's like 18 on Good and Bad Ghosts publishers. So the big one is Asmodee. So
oh yeah.
I could see it being them. So, you know, mainly, but yeah, pretty weird.
Yeah. I don't know how they got away with that. I mean, I wonder if they like, if the designer or like, is this a game based on like some old, like, you know, most games that we find that these abstract games are based on like old pub games or old like Egyptian games, you know, that were played way back then with just like rocks and sticks to make the patterns, you know. And I wonder if this was like some kind of variation of a game that old. Like, I didn't find anything on that, so it may not be. This may just be an actual game that was designed around this time. But I wonder why, yeah, they all decided to, hey, let's all get together and publish this game in four different ways in so many different box variations. Like, there's a monkey one, too. And there's a Christmas tree one.
Ridiculous. That makes me think that it probably was an old game. Mm-hmm. You know, it was probably, well, so take a game like Santorini. I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself. But I believe Santorini was based on like a college professor's abstract game that he created himself.
Okay.
And so like, it was just a game that he had that he kept in his classroom and stuff that he had just created. And then, some students or somebody came in and said, hey, this was a great game. We should actually monetize it. So, I mean, that makes the most sense to me. The fact that there's so many of them, it's such an easy thing to reskin. My guess is that, yeah, it was probably some sort of pub game or something that it's not going to be attributed to one person. It was just a game that people knew. And then someone decided, hey, let's
do it.
Let's slap some phantoms on it. Let's slap some ghosts on it. Let's slap some Christmas trees on it. And hey, why not? Jekyll and Hyde.
Yes. That's hilarious. So, and another thing is like, why did they choose Jekyll and Hyde as one of the skins? But like I said, that's one thing we're probably never going to know.
Yeah. That's one of the funniest things to me about this is this game is made for kids, right?
Yes.
7 is the youngest to adult.
At least that's what they marketed it to.
Right. The ghost ones, I could see. The phantom ones, sure. Those are kind of kid friendly. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, not so much.
Very much not so kid friendly. Like,
just the concept of, you know, this doctor, you know, and then this kind of psycho. Which, you know, we can get into all the different variations of Hyde that have been out there, but yeah, I mean, and then let's talk about a little bit about like the old classics, right? So like all these old books, you know, Robert Louis Stevenson or Charles Dickens or, any of the sci-fi giants, right? H.G. Wells or Asimov, like their stories weren't just interesting or exciting or told a story. Like there was always so much more going on to them. There was political science and there was sociology and there was psychology and they were just so much denser and quite frankly, better thought out than a lot of the books we get right now.
Absolutely.
Maybe not as exciting, but written differently. And so this was one of those, right? Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde it's not a story of, you know, it's not a giant space opera with lightsabers. Like it's about a man who creates a potion and drinks it, and it turns him into a different personality. So it's the same man, but he is no longer Dr. Jekyll. He's now a persona of Mr. Hyde, that has no social boundaries. He doesn't play by the rules of anything goes. It's very, Dorian Gray, if you know Oscar Wilde. You know, just, he just decides he can do whatever he wants.
That's kind of his release. So, yeah. His kind of release that Dr. Jekyll made was he needed that release to be able to go and do what he wanted and not have to worry about the social aspect of that.
Yeah. And so, you know, someone at Waddington's decided this would be a great theme for kids. Let's do it. Oh man. So yeah, I don't understand why Jekyll and Hyde. Now, the theme on the abstract, which again is weird because it's definitely an abstract game. So the theme feels a little out of place, but at the same time, you do have the front and the back, which is a good representation of the two personalities.
Yes.
So I can see why they chose that as opposed to 20,000 Leagues or Treasure Island or Invisible Man. You know, none of those would fit with this game. But they definitely missed the mark on the kids aiming for the kids. That's a weird conversation to have with, a 7-year-old.
Oh, absolutely.
You can do it, I guess. Yeah. I mean, 7-year-olds aren't, they're not dumb, you know, but I would hope that there would be a conversation there if you played this game with them.
Oh yeah. There would have to be, why is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? What's the difference? How long do you have? Yeah. So that's kind of the game there. That's, like I said, not much to it, but there's some weird history behind it and some weird things kind of going around at the same time that we just don't have answers to. Maybe one day we'll find those answers. But that's what we do on this podcast. We find those weird games that need explaining. And so that's kind of what we brought for you guys today. So let's go ahead and wrap this up with our final thoughts. And we'll leave you all to decide if this is something you want to purchase on eBay, because there are plenty of copies still out there to get. I'll go first. So Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. So this game is, as an abstract game, it's cool. Like, there's not much to it. It's one of those games you can sit in the bar, you can sit in a doctor's office, coffee shop, whatever, and just play a quick little abstract, hidden information collection game. I think it's great. You know, it's like you're sitting down at like Cracker Barrel with that little puzzle with like the golf tees that you kind of have to like, you know, place them all in a specific way, and, or like remove the ones without, you know, if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. This is kind of one of those games you can just sit and just keep playing over and over again with somebody just to see who can rack up the most wins, you know? So at that part, I understand. It's a cool little abstract game. But why they reskin this thing, you know, 20 different ways, we'll never know. But I think as just a cool little abstract game, it's not bad. Like, it's just a cool concept of an abstract game. Terrible on reskinning this thing and choosing Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. That has really no reason to go with this game. But all in all, it was an interesting thing to talk about for sure, and to find some information on and to study a little bit more about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and kind of what it ran around at this time. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, so my final thoughts are pretty similar. I think the reskinning and the choice of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde it's a little strange. I think that marketing it towards kids is just totally way off, but opening it up to adults as well, adults can understand it and kind of get the reference. The strategy is a little lost on me. I understand, you know, three ways to win, but it just feels that there's actually no strategy the entire time.
Yeah.
Which is fine, you know, and especially for younger kids, just the idea of moving pieces and thinking ahead, even if the true outcome of thinking ahead is completely luck and random based, allowing them to kind of think ahead and do that. I mean, I don't think it's going to be better than checkers or chess, but it's the same concept. And so I'm okay with that. I'm okay with playing it. I think it's a fun game. I think it could be kind of cleaned up and spruced up and made to look better. But, you know, again, it was, 1980, so whatever. You mentioned that you could probably make your own. I think it would be very simple to make your own. Not that we wouldn't want you to go buy board games.
Exactly. You know,
it's what we love. But it would be very easy to make. But the biggest issue, I think, for me is, and we've talked about this too with like Kilkenny Cats last season. A very similar game. Kilkenny Cats was bigger. and a little more thematic, I guess, but it had dice, and whereas this game doesn't. So they've at least evolved to the point of not including that.
Yeah.
You know, so they've taken out some of the luck, but at the end of the day, whether this is a good game or not, if you want an abstract, semi-thematic game, just go buy Santorini.
Oh, gosh, like, yes.
And I mentioned this probably three or four times last season. Like, Santorini is just a very straightforward game, but it's so easy, it's so simple, and it's so strategic. Even when you're playing with four people, like, there's just so much going on that, you know, it's not a heavy game, but you have to sit and think about it. And so that's kind of where I land on this one is, would I play this game if I had it? Absolutely. Would I rather have Santorini?
Absolutely.
So I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at with it. I think if you can take anything from this podcast, my most sincere hope is that you go and read Robert Louis Stevenson. If you've never read any of his books, he's one of my favorite authors. Treasure Island, Treasure Planet, if you've seen the Disney film, is just one of my all-time favorites. So that's what I would hope you would walk away with is just know Robert Louis Stevenson is awesome. Waddington's is not. Then you're good to go. So those are my final thoughts.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for hanging out with us for another episode. We will be back with more because we love talking about board games and we love just chatting together anyways. So don't forget, you can find us on all kinds of social media. Just look for Meeples and Mishaps. You can visit our podcast family at Quirkosity.com. And don't forget to leave us that awesome review on what you think of our podcast. Or you can just email us from our social sites and we will chat with you guys. So until next time, I'm Corey.
And I'm Kalen. And we'll catch you later.
This has been a production of the Quirkosity Podcast Network, a network of small to mid-sized independent podcasts with the same goal, to have fun and keep it quirky. Quirkosity, where podcasts and quirky meet. Visit Quirkosity.com today to find out more.